Welcome, everybody. I'm Dr. Anu, co-host of the Hormone Super Conference. And today I'm joined by Dr. Mark Sklar. Mark is a doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine. He's done training with Harvard Medical School and the Mind Body Institute. He's also the past president of the American Board of Oriental Reproductive Medicine. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Dr. Anu. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And I love talking about hormones and fertility. So this, allows my day to start off on the right foot.
Yeah, this is such a huge topic. What are you typically seeing, Mark? When people come into your clinic, what kind of patterns are you seeing?
That's a great question and a big one to answer because it does vary. I'm sure that when you are in the clinic working with clients, there are some trends and tendencies that, and so forth, but we see so much variety and individuality as well. And that's one thing that I love about what we do. It's also what I love about how we approach medicine is that individualized approach to really meet patients and couples and members of my program where they're at. So that piece is really important. It's interesting, like sometimes we'll go through waves. I'm sure you noticed it where you just see a little bit more of one thing or another. Right now I'm going through a wave of just seeing a lot more PCOS than other things for whatever reason. But prior to that, I would have said that for the 9 months prior, I would have said that I wasn't seeing a lot of that. And I was seeing more a lot of in terms of older women who are having lower AMH and higher FSH, or women who are in good reproductive age, but still having those same issues, seeing lower AMH and high FSH, or lots of irregularities with their menstrual cycle, even to the tune of amenorrhea or hypothalamic amenorrhea. And so these are things that just rotate through. I would say the overarching themes that I see, regardless of how the universe decides to send us couples, is really women who are trying to find answers. They are not clear as to why they've been struggling. They're not clear as to what has been the challenge, and they've been trying for years without success. So that's definitely an overarching theme that I see. I think stress is always a kind of through line across the board with everybody in varying degrees. I think stress is a huge issue that we see. Sometimes that stress arises from just the challenges of fertility. Like I was reading someone's paperwork yesterday, and she says, "Yes, I'm under a lot of stress, but 98% of it is because I'm going through fertility challenges." Which is definitely something that we see, but in one way or another, and some degree or another, stress is always something that needs to be addressed and factored in. I could go on because I feel like I see so many different things. Gut issues are a huge, huge issue, actually, in the work that I do and in kind of the discovery phase of trying to assess what couples are going through and the challenges they arise. So I see a lot of gut issues and a lot of toxin issues. And these things are things, areas that I feel like need more attention. But when it comes to fertility and reproductive health, they get very little because we think of our bodies in these silos and compartmentalized systems that don't really interact with one another. And so when a couple is starting to try to get pregnant, or they've been struggling for a little bit of time and they want support for it, naturally their minds just go to, okay, well, what do I need to do for my ovaries and my uterus and my testes, right? Like, what do I need to do to get those to function properly? They forget about everything else. And I think that can really push us in the wrong direction pretty quickly. We have to remember, for everyone watching, that our bodies are not disjointed. They don't live in these little silos, and they're not compartmentalized as much as like our modern medical system wants us to think that way because of all the different specialties that we have in the world. Everything's communicating. And I think the biggest thing that we need to do as individuals going through our fertility journey is try to open up those walls and those doors and think more broadly in terms of my overall health and what do I need to do to be healthier? Because my firm belief and what I've seen over the last 20 years is that if we can get someone just healthier, fix all the things that are going on potentially, that we create a much healthier, safer environment for fertility and reproductive health, and that fertility naturally improves and couples naturally get pregnant. So yeah, those are things that I typically see, but I do think that we need to just open that up a little bit more and be more mindful of just getting healthier.
That's a great overview. Tell us a bit about what you see with blood sugars in PCOS and fertility. What kind of things are you seeing?
Yeah, great question. Actually, you know, I'm going to take the blood sugar issue a little bit farther than just PCOS. Something that I'm absolutely seeing more and more is whether someone has PCOS or not, blood sugar is a vital component that needs to be addressed. And, you know, I'll just briefly mention lower blood sugar. Obviously, that needs to be supported properly. But the bigger issue, the bigger concern, and the one we see much more common is, you know, insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome on the verge of diabetes. These are all things that are a big, big issue and very pervasive in modern culture because of our diets, our sedentary lifestyle, hereditary, right? It's been passed down. So that's a huge thing. And one of the things that I see quite a bit is it creates so much more inflammation and it creates, you know, potentially not in everybody, but in many, this like, you know, potential autoimmune component and response that happens. Excuse me. And so that is such a important piece when we're trying to regulate our hormones and support our bodies. So blood sugar is huge. Obviously with PCOS, it's a huge component. I don't always see it as predominant in PCOS as you would think. There are quite a bit of variations when we are working with polycystic ovarian syndrome women, but it's obviously something that either needs to be ruled in or out and needs to be supported one way or another. I don't think, for everyone listening, I think if we can focus to some degree on having healthy blood sugar, because for some of us, that's going to mean something different, right? So I'm going to say regular balanced blood sugar. I think you're doing your body a huge, huge benefit and service. It allows an extra burden to be taken off of your system. It naturally reduces inflammation. You're going to sleep better. You're going to function better. You're going to have more energy. Your endocrine system can do what it needs to do in terms of focusing on regulating its hormones. It's such a huge, huge and important issue that, you know, some of us who might be thin, like you or I, might not even put two thoughts into it because we have this preconceived idea that you have to be overweight to have irregular blood sugar, and that could be a problem. But the reality is I'm seeing it across the board with everybody. And we need to put more attention to it. I think there's, with all these diets that we kind of get attached to and fixated on, there's a lot of issues with it. I've seen a lot of fasting, you know, intermittent fasting, which there's some research to show that it can benefit blood sugar. But in those individuals who already have elevated blood sugar, might have issues in those situations. I do think maybe in small doses it can be beneficial, but I find that most of the individuals that I'm working with are undernourished. They're not eating enough. They are not getting enough calories. They're not supporting their body properly. And I'm seeing as a result of that, a dysregulation with their blood sugar. So this is a huge, huge issue and something that we need to support. And I think the general idea that we all need to take away from this is I need to eat balanced meals. I need to eat regularly to support and nourish my body properly. I need to avoid processed sugars and I need to exercise. Like the amount of people that just don't move and exercise it's really that in of itself is a huge problem in our modern society. We're all sedentary, like you and I are at this moment sitting in front of a computer. It's only gotten worse in the last 4 years. And we're not moving enough. We're not being active enough. And so I think that's a really, really big thing. So some of the work that I do foundationally with couples is I just want them moving regularly on a daily basis. I want them just focusing on good quality food, eating a balanced meal. All of this stuff sounds really simple, but if we're not doing that on a daily basis, and if we're not putting enough attention on that, it's really easy for those things to just slip by the wayside, to reprioritize other things, to eat just things that might be more convenient and not as good for us. It's a huge, huge problem.
And the undernourished part is such a key aspect, isn't it? Because even if we're eating enough food or enough calories, we can still be undernourished if we're not getting the right nutrients. How big of an issue is that in fertility?
The quality of the food with the proper nutrients in it is essential, right? We all need those building blocks, those key nutrients to support our hormones, to just support overall general health, right? I started off by mentioning we just need to be healthier to have good, proper hormone balance and healthy reproductive function. Well, that starts with eating good quality food. One of the things I often say to couples, because I review everyone's diet logs, like I ask them to do a diet journal for me and I sit down and review it. One of the things I always say to them is aside from any big or small adjustments that I make to your diet today, the number one thing that you should be focusing on is the quality of the food that you're eating. Where does the meat come from? Where does the poultry come from? Where does the dairy come from? Where do the fruits and vegetables come from? Are they conventional and sprayed with chemicals and pesticides and toxins? Do they come from a good, healthy, nourished soil to provide good, proper nutrients? Or does it not, right? Like that is such a key component. So I actually say to them, before you make all these grandiose changes of, you know, adding more of this and less of that and whatever else, is you need to change foundationally how you're shopping for your food, where you're getting your food and the quality of that food. A lot of times that comes from just shopping locally, right? Not just at the grocery store locally, but really locally, like at a local farmer's market where you can get produce that's raised and farmed right there. Same thing with all the other meats and so forth that you can get locally. And so much of one, if we did that, we're supporting a local community, but two, you're getting food from your area that hopefully is treated properly. You can ask the person who grew it and raised it, did you use chemicals? Where did it come from? You know, you can ask all the questions you want. So for me, that's a huge, huge piece. I know that's not always possible for everybody and not maybe always on a regular basis, but it's a huge component that I think is really overlooked. So the quality of the food is number one. And then after that, I want everyone to really focus on eating enough healthy food. We don't eat enough vegetables. Overall, you know, we do not. Many people think vegetables are, you know, a potato. which is fine. Yes, it's a root vegetable, but it's not the same thing as eating a variety of colors. It's not the same thing as eating your greens on a regular basis, daily basis. And, you know, I'm not sure about where you live, but where I live, carbs are, you know, heavily sought out after. So it becomes a protein and carb meal versus a balanced meal. And I think really just teaching couples how to eat balanced meals with proper amounts of protein and good healthy carbs and vegetables and fat is really one of the more important things that we can do. So that's important with the quality of the food that we eat.
Fantastic. And before you mentioned that you see with people that have dysregulated blood sugars, you're seeing a lot of inflammation and autoimmunity. And of course, autoimmunity can then go on to affect the thyroid function. How much of a problem is that in subfertility?
Yeah, I often joke that the holy trinity in my office is blood sugar, thyroid, and adrenal function, those three. And one, they often could look very similar to one another. You know, when you're assessing somebody, a lot of the same symptomology will come up for any one of those. So it's really important that you rule out or rule in any one of those categories. It's much harder when someone has all three areas affected versus just one. It's not uncommon to have two. And so absolutely, stress is going to impact all of those, make it much harder for you to regulate your blood sugar, make it much harder for you to regulate your thyroid function. From an immune component, I mean, thyroid autoimmunity is one of the more common things that I see across the board. We started off with PCOS, by the way. Second, when every time I see PCOS, have to rule out hypothyroidism and have to rule out Hashimoto's disease. It's the most common secondary issue I see in conjunction with PCOS. And so, you know, excuse me. And so, you know, supporting proper healthy blood sugar, reducing inflammation is going to impact those other systems. And thyroid function is essential. One of the more common things that I see with thyroid issues, if we just have a standard, for lack of a word, standard hypothyroidism, that will make it much harder for someone to actually conceive. The other issue that we will see is with Hashimoto's or autoimmune thyroid, we will definitely have a much harder time holding a pregnancy or even getting pregnant in terms of an implantation happening. So we have to address those things. And unfortunately, it's not necessarily a quick fix and does take some time, not only to get it to a place where your thyroid and immune function are healthy, but to be able to maintain that. So that's also a challenge. It could be, you know, supporting that could be relatively strict and difficult for couples. So I try to be as flexible and supportive as I can, but I think we need to get through a difficult, sometimes often a more difficult, challenging time in the beginning because of all the changes that need to be made to get to a place where we're more comfortable and everything's working well and we're used to it. I'd like to think, because this is a common question that gets answered, is like, is this a lifelong thing? Is this going to be something that I can change? Will I be able to fix it forever? I'd like to think that we can get to a place for many of us. It's not always possible. It's also not always possible for that to happen so quickly. And I think for most of us, much of what we're going to achieve when we're looking for that like long-term, you know, do I have to continually support this long-term, is I like to think of it as where are you going to be after you're done having children postpartum? Because up until that point, I just want to make sure everything stays stable. I think we have a lot more flexibility to kind of play with it and how we manage it after you're done conceiving and you've already given birth and you have your children. I think we have some flexibility there, but thyroid function is so key and so important for maintaining a healthy pregnancy and having healthy children that it's not something I'm comfortable with messing with once we've got it to a good place until someone gets to that point in time. So I do think it's possible that it doesn't necessarily have to be a forever thing. But I think it takes some time before we can get to that point.
Yes. One of the other things that you mentioned that you saw was cases of functional hypothalamic amenorrhea when women have had their periods and then they've lost their periods. How do you approach that from a fertility perspective?
It's challenging. It's not always easy. Hypothalamic amenorrhea is a challenge overall. With that being said, we've had some amazing successes over the years, but it's not, again, not a quick fix. This is something that just takes time and a lot of patience. So I think the first thing that needs to be assessed in a situation like this is how much time is the couple going to give themselves to get to a better place? You know, if they're older, let's say closer to 40, time is of the essence here. So, or at least in their minds, time is of the essence because typically they want more than one child. They've already put in all this time and energy. I don't think we have enough time because they're not able to give enough time to that process to see the change. And so we might be working with a combination of things, hormone therapy, a natural approach, you know, IVF, you know, it just depends on what the circumstance is and how much time the couple is willing to put in and give to the process. The younger they are, the more opportunity we have. And that is really key because it takes off one aspect of the burden, which is the stress component, because the less time you have, the more stress is a component, because they're just, you know, they're pressured by trying to have to make all those decisions and wanting to see change as soon as possible. So that's a concern. When we start working with couples with enough time, then first and foremost, managing time. The next thing is getting to a key piece of why they're having this issue. Okay. So I have a woman right now who has this exact issue. And it all started because of stress, and the stress she was stress emotionally, but also the stress she was putting on her body physically. She was overdoing it with a lot of marathons. She was training, heavy training. And she caused a huge, huge problem to her body. In the last 4 years, she has only gotten her cycle twice on her own. And, you know, I just looked at her and I said, how much of this, like, how important is this to you to get a regular cycle and have children? She said, it's my number one priority. Like, okay, then you're going to have to make real changes in your lifestyle, which is going to be difficult for you because you're used to doing something else. And for you, that feeds your soul. You think of it as de-stressing, but it's actually causing a stress on your body. You also, it's something that you, it's part of who you are. So when I say to you, you cannot exercise more than walking, to someone who's been running and doing CrossFit and whatever else, that's a huge, difficult change to make. Okay. But to everybody listening, I want to show you what's possible when you do commit to something like this and you do see the change. So I've been working with her for 2 months. She has not had a cycle for the prior 2 years. She stopped crazy exercising. I got her to make sure she was eating and nourished. We talked earlier about making sure you're getting enough calories and just nourishment and nutrients, made sure she was eating properly, put her on some supplements. She just got her cycle for the first time. Now, she was super excited. So was I. That's not good enough. Okay. One cycle doesn't tell me we fixed anything. Okay. One cycle tells me we're making change, but we haven't fixed anything. I want to see 3 consecutive cycles. So one thing I'm also having to do with her is I'm having to teach her how to read her cycle, understand her cycle and her hormones, because now she's tracking them. This is all education that allows her to better understand her body and be able to not have to rely on me to support herself moving forward in the future, right? So I'm not stopping her from trying to conceive, by the way. I'm like, you can keep trying as much as you want. It's totally fine. But my goal, first and foremost, is to get you to have 3 cycles. I actually do not even care how regular they are, although I would prefer that they're more regular, but I just want 3 cycles in a relatively reasonable time frame. Then we start to manage that better. We see that her body's responding. She's doing all the changes I needed her to do. Then we say, okay, we want to make sure this is as close to 28 to 30 days as possible, which I think in her case we can get. Now she's at an amazing place to just try naturally. So she was at the point where she was considering going to IVF, and she's young. She's in her early 30s. There's no reason to jump to IVF at this point in time, because they wouldn't even focus on fixing this issue. They would just bypass it to try to, you know, create an embryo and get pregnant, which is fine for some people, no issue with that. But really for her, I think she has such a huge opportunity to regulate her cycles and learn what's okay for her body and what's not, so that we can get her to a place where she can have regular cycles. So she this is working out for her. It's not always that fast. Like, I actually didn't expect it to be 2 months for her, because in my previous work with hypothalamic amenorrhea, it's really taken a minimum of 6 months to see the changes that we wanted to see.
I love that you're laying out the timeline like that, because it's absolutely true that, you know, time is of the essence in functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. And yet we see so many women who have been put on the pill to kind of cover, disguise the problem. And then when it comes to fertility, you know, they're offered IVF, which is it's a hard route. I mean, it's a hard route to go through. And actually, naturally, there's so much one can be doing. And there are things like hormones, which are fantastic, you know, bioidentical hormones are fantastic at restoring cycles. And they're not like a contraceptive, you know, they're not suppressing or masking the ovaries.
Yeah.
That's a really, very powerful piece. I mean, the other piece that you mentioned, or that you saw quite a lot of, was older women who are wanting to get pregnant. And they're just kind of on that verge of the FSH creeping up, their AMH, anti-Müllerian hormone, which is a marker, I suppose, of ovarian reserve, just, you know, dropping a little bit. What do you tend to tell those women?
Yeah, so I think those women have a ton of opportunity, and actually a huge part of the couples who I work with and support really do fall into that category. They're either exactly the way you just described it. They're, you know, maybe on the verge of their late 30s, you know, early 40s, and some of those hormones are shifting exactly the way you've said it, or they're actually older than that, and those hormones have shifted a little bit more extreme than that. That's a big part of the community that I support. First and foremost, I want to just mention to everybody listening, just because you're older doesn't mean that you have egg quality issues or that you have low ovarian reserve. I want to just say that out loud, because there's an assumption that's made, and I see this really, like, literally every day, that they've either read or they've been told that they have poor egg quality or low ovarian reserve. But when you look at their FSH and AMH, that's not necessarily true. So it's really important that we understand what those levels should be for your age and what's appropriate. Secondly, the focus I have with those individuals, especially if they're concerned about their AMH levels, which is not my favorite marker, by the way, and I do not believe is a true indicator of ovarian reserve long-term. It's something we test because we should have the information, but it's not something I rely on dramatically. But what I tell everybody, it's not about how many eggs you have to use on any given cycle. It's about the quality of the eggs that you are producing. So for me, most important is going to be the quality of the eggs. And so with that, I would lean on supporting FSH over AMH any day. Okay. But I want to make sure that that's really an issue, right? Like, we've talked about all these other issues, which can make it feel like we have egg quality issues. But often I would say 50% of the women that approach me and say they have egg quality issues or been told that really don't. So I just want that to be set from the beginning, that we do. That's why I take this broad approach to make sure we're looking at everyone as an individual and making sure that we're addressing the areas that need to be supported. But let's just say someone does have elevated FSH in some degree and lower AMH in some degree. AMH should be a marker that theoretically tells us, oh, this is the number, and this means you have X amount of eggs left. For me, it's actually more important that you're ovulating regularly and menstruating regularly. And if we're really going to look at, you know, how many eggs we have on any given cycle, I'd much prefer an ultrasound than an AMH marker on a regular basis, because it's going to tell me what you have for that cycle and what can be used on that given cycle. Now, with that being said, I also think, you know, if you're trying naturally, by the way, you only should be releasing one egg when you ovulate. On some occasions, we release more, but usually it's just one. So I don't need all 4, 5, 10 of those follicles to mature and grow on any given cycle. I just need the good one. I just need the best one. That's why my focus is on quality. Then it's about finding why your numbers are where they are. Why is your AMH lower than we would have expected it to be? Why is your FSH higher than we would have expected it to be? Those are not reasons. Like being given the diagnosis of high FSH or low AMH is not in and of itself a root cause for what is going on. So we need to take a step back and then take another broader approach and say, well, what is impacting those numbers? What is causing that to happen? And we've already started talking throughout this, this conversation about all the other reasons that could be impacting this. Your digestive system, your stress, your lifestyle, lack of sleep, environmental toxins, physical trauma in some way, emotional trauma. These are all real reasons why, and then some autoimmune issue, like I'm leaving things out, right? Poor blood circulation. These are all real reasons why those numbers can be impacted. So I want everyone listening to just say, don't take that information as the answer and then say, oh, okay, I just need to go move forward with IVF. Yes, maybe you do need IVF, but it's not going to address those issues. It's not going to fix potentially those issues. It's going to bypass those issues. And often it doesn't do it well. It doesn't bypass those areas well. So my goal, even if someone does need IVF, is I want to get them to a good place where they can actually be more successful and have a much better outcome when they do go through it. Because if your FSH is high and your fertility doctor is giving you FSH to stimulate your ovaries and allow those follicles to mature and grow, you're already putting yourself in a difficult situation because your body was not meant to have more FSH when it's already elevated or trending in that direction. That needs to be managed in a different way, but conventional IVF actually does not support that model. So they're going to give you too much FSH. And what I typically see in that situation, by the way, is that the ovaries start to shut down. They respond in the opposite way as other than what would be expected because they don't want more FSH. That's just not normal for them. So we have to be careful when we take this, when we get this information, then assume that the solution is IVF because that's what we've been told. Okay. We really want to get to the root issue. And I think all of everybody watching can to some degree. They might not be able to do this all on their own in to get through the whole process and support themselves, but I think they could objectively assess their health, their lifestyle, and their life to understand what areas do need more attention potentially. And maybe you're going to miss some things because some things are just not outwardly seen. You have to do some testing for. But in general, I think we can all recognize like, oh, I just don't get enough sleep, or I'm too stressed, or I don't eat well enough, or I work too much, or I don't exercise, or, you know, my whole life I've had digestive issues and I've kind of just placated them. I haven't really addressed them. You know, whatever the issue is, we all can inherently, if we take a little bit of time, take a step back, you know, breathe, take a moment to think, maybe an hour to think like, what is my body telling me? What areas need some more support? And then you go get the help for that. Again, you might be missing something, and that's where, you know, professionals can step in and do a much broader assessment, find things that you couldn't see and really support that. But I think we can all know if we're ready to get pregnant or not. And if we do find that there's areas that are off, where we can start. And I think that's really important because if you can objectively see that, you're already taking a step to recognize I need help. I know that there's something else that needs support and I just don't know how to do it on my own. So I need to get the support that I need to do that.
Yes. And I think this is becoming such a growing issue, isn't it? Because more and more women want to have kids later and there's so much we can do to support them, like all the methods you've said. And things like natural progesterone, should they fall pregnant, you know, to reduce the risk of miscarriage.
I love it.
So there is a lot out there and that's good for people to know.
Yeah, when these women are trying to get pregnant, later, they focus so much on their age. They focus so much that they waited too long. Listen, the things you cannot change is the past and waiting too long. So let's not focus on it. You also, of all the things you can control and change, you cannot change your age. You can't change how long you've been on this earth. So to spend our energy and time and resources to focus on our age is not going to benefit us. What we can do is focus on our cellular age. How can we improve the age and health of our cells and our body? And that's all the things that we've been talking about. So if we focus on that, then you have a lot of control and a lot of power to make changes and get the results that you're looking for.
And hormones are so responsive to this particular part. How do you find the peace with Chinese medicine and hormone balance?
I love it. I think it's so powerful. I think it actually works better when it is integrated with a functional medicine approach, which is the approach that I take. But I love Chinese medicine. I mean, one, from just talking about acupuncture, from an ability to increase blood circulation, regulate your nervous system, support homeostasis, work with the rhythms of your menstrual cycle, acupuncture is amazing at that. And there's a ton of research to support acupuncture and fertility. So that is number one. But when we're trying to make change physiologically and ongoingly with hormones and our endocrine system, that's really where I do rely on Chinese herbs quite a bit. It's not the only thing that I'll do. I'll do a lot with just nutraceuticals and supplements, and I like to kind of blend those. But one of the beautiful things about Chinese medicine is that it doesn't treat one specific, like a formula, an herbal formula, doesn't treat one specific thing or doesn't have to. It can be composed in such a way that it addresses multiple areas that are off in someone's body simultaneously. So that's such a beautiful thing. I do think we need to be careful with Chinese herbs. One, in its use in conjunction with other supplements. One, in its use in conjunction with medication, especially if someone's going through fertility treatments, because there's not a lot of research around that combination. I also think we need to be careful because what I've seen over the years is a lot of providers who use Chinese medicine get fixated on like one symptom or one issue with someone, and that's what they're prescribing a formula for, as opposed to what is the patient's goal? What is the patient trying to achieve? Where are they trying to go? And what's their main objective? And then that needs to be, I think, focused a little bit more directly on that. The other thing I'm not a huge fan of is there's this belief and model in Chinese medicine that you give an herbal formula for every phase of a woman's cycle. And in Chinese medicine, there's four phases to a woman's cycle, and you would modify that formula based on that. So menstruation, the follicular phase, ovulation, and the luteal phase, that you would literally give them four different formulas and change it almost weekly around someone's cycle. I think that can be beneficial potentially in someone who maybe has hypothalamic amenorrhea and needs support at different phases for different hormones. But in general, I don't believe that that model works. And I haven't seen it work enough for me to believe in it long-term. Most individuals need one root-focused formula to address, to support them throughout their cycle, maybe at most two for one half of the cycle and the other. But they really don't need four. And I think those are the providers that they're seeing typically that I find that do that are really young in practice, don't have a lot of experience with fertility. And they see these four formulas and they're like, oh yeah, someone told me I can just do this and help someone get pregnant. You know, it's okay, but I really think that a formula needs to be specifically either designed or chosen for that individual based on their root issues, that they should be able to take almost the entire menstrual cycle.
Interesting, because there is a lot of attention out there at the moment, isn't there, about cycling many things.
Seeds.
But what you're saying, which I, you know, I think is a very important take-home message is, you know, for each person, there'll be maybe one or two main underlying issues, whether that's detoxification or the gut or the adrenals, and actually honing in on that could have more power, has more power than.
Yeah, I'm a fan of with nutraceuticals and Chinese herbs is to come up with a process. Like, we don't have to do everything all at one time, right? I mean, I know that couples want results ASAP and they would like everything treated at the same time. But if you do that, you're giving them, like, you know, a huge list. And I already use a lot of supplements, so I try to pare that down as much as I can. But ideally, you're going to do this in phases. So if you do need to detoxify, I don't like to do anything else. I like to do that, make sure that's taken care of. Then I move on to the next phase of things and then potentially the next phase. And modifying your supplements and your herbs and whatever else you're recommending throughout the process. You've given it to them. You're seeing progress. You see change after a period, 2-3 months. Let's adjust if we can. Maybe let's pare it down, right? Like, we shouldn't have to, someone shouldn't be staying on something long-term for a year or more. It's probably not going to benefit them at that point. Things need to be modified. And so that's actually one of the mistakes I see by couples is that they'll get support. They get a plan. They don't circle back with the provider. They just assume, or they forget, whatever it is, that they should stay on this long-term. And that's not healthy for them either. Like, ideally, you want to check in. Am I seeing the progress I should be seeing? Are we seeing the change? Then what do we do from there, right? You need that ongoing support and hopefully progress check-ins and modifications so that we can support you properly. But really, you shouldn't be on all these things, you know, forever.
And we're also in a phase of seeing testosterone levels on the decrease, sperm counts on the decrease. What do you say to men out there who are having fertility issues?
I'm really happy you brought this up. I thought about it a moment ago when we were talking and I was like, oh, I hope we talk about men because there's so much to say here. 50% of all fertility issues are male factor. And I want everyone to hear that. This is not exclusively a female issue. Okay. This is a combined issue, male, female. Even if it's miscarriages, recurrent pregnancy loss, 50% of all miscarriages are male factor related. So we need to make sure that we are supporting both sides, okay? Both partners in this process. That's essential for getting overall progress. So good, healthy sperm is really important. Now, that's really hard right now because all we've been seeing for the last 50 years is a decline in sperm count and quality. And that's a direct reflection of the modern world we live in, the amount of toxins that sperm are exposed to or humans, the amount of stress that we're under, the type of lifestyle that we have, you know, overindulging, alcohol, food, whatever it might be. This is impacting our sperm quality. To me, sperm is a direct indicator of someone's overall health. Doing a semen analysis and seeing what it looks like gives me so much information to the health of that individual. Okay. I think this should be part of someone's, like, annual workup. If men actually went in for annual workups, I feel like this should be part of their annual workup because it gives us so much information about what's going on. We've seen such a decline that we are now comfortable with such small numbers and parameters as being normal when it comes to sperm. So for instance, sperm count used to be considered normal, 100 million, 50 million. Over the years, it's just decreased. Now what's considered normal is 15 million. That's like nowhere near 100, right? So this is a huge problem that we're seeing. And it's really something that we need to take note of. Sperm are really sensitive and volatile. They're influenced very much by small changes or small impacts, both positively and negatively. So if you're around a lot of chemicals, if the testes get overheated, we're going to see a huge decline in those numbers. But if we clean up our environment, if we make sure that we don't overheat the testes, if we nourish our body with good food, if we exercise properly, if we get plenty of sleep, if we just take care of ourselves, barring any physical blockages and obstructions, we will see positive change in sperm parameters. And I think this is really, really important. And one of the things I want to hit home on here is we need men to take more responsibility over their health and be a joint partner on the fertility journey with their partners. It's not just about egg quality. You might be told that, you might read it, and I'm telling you the only reason you hear more about that, about, you know, focusing on egg quality and sperm's not an issue, is because of the prevalence and increased use of IVF. And even then, I would say that's still not a good enough reason. We want to give them, even if you're going through IVF, the best sperm to choose from, not the worst sperm to choose from. Okay. And there's only so much they can do when they're picking. Like, they can't look in it cellularly. They can't do, you know, because when you look at the DNA and the morphology of sperm, you end up having to, you know, unfortunately kill the sperm to do that. So they can't do that on an IVF cycle because they need to use the sperm. So they're just making the best guess. Well, if we give them small numbers to choose from, there's not a lot. They're not great, but you could go find one or two to match the amount of eggs you have. Like, okay, that's fine. But really, like, is that what we want to do? Like, just give them the best of the worst? That's not ideal, right? That's not what you want your child to be, because that's what you're creating, right? You don't want your child to be the best of the worst, right? I know that sounds awful, but that's the image I have. We want to create healthy children so that they can create healthy children for generations. That means you have to be as healthy as possible. And as a man, that means you need to take responsibility for what your part is in this process to create children. And I think that goes above and beyond, you know, I just really want to stress that here, because it's not, I can't tell you how many men ignore this, don't listen. It's difficult to get them to do a semen analysis. I mean, if you want to have children and you want to have a good, long-lasting relationship, be an active participant in the fertility process, please.
That is a really, really powerful message. If there's one thing that you would say to everyone out there listening that they could implement today, what would it be?
I think personally assessing our own lifestyles and picking the one or two things that you can control and that you can change. If it means better diets and better cooking habits, let's do it. Getting to bed earlier and getting enough sleep, let's do it. Managing your stress better, or just a little bit of exercise, getting rid of toxins in your household. Whatever it is that you know that you could do, pick one or two things and focus on that. And once you've got that down solid and you know, okay, I can do this, like, it's just part of my routine, now you add something else. And then if you need support, reach out to someone who knows what they're doing, has experience, who can support you through that.
Fantastic. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today and explaining everything as you have.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.